Well, welcome back to this episode of Tales of the Resistance. This is a podcast all about antimicrobial resistance and its impact on our daily lives. I'm Mara Zelt. I am the project manager with the I Am Responsible Project and one of the regular hosts of the podcast, along with the lovely Amber Patterson.
Hi, I'm Amber Patterson. I'm the Multimedia's graphics designer for the Schmidt Lab and the I Am Responsible team, and I'm happy to be here.
And as always, happy to have you. And in today, returning again to the guest chair is the marvelous Noelle Atieno-More. Welcome back again, Noelle.
Hello, I'm Noelle Atieno-More, a recent graduate of the University of Nebraska and Lincoln. With a degree in environmental engineering and also a part of the I Am Responsible team.
So we're continuing with our discussion once more on the book Quarantine Life from Cholera to COVID-19 by Dr. Kari Nixon. We'll be reading or we'll be discussing the last chapter, chapter 10. I think we have premiered this chapter a couple times in our previous discussions. So we know that this is a topic of interest, but I'll just jump in with chapter 10 is called The Hot Zone and how one author launched an Ebola fear campaign that still hinders pandemic containment today. So this discussion, like the subtitle suggests, is about Ebola and the public response to Ebola from the 1990s through the 2010s, the sort of xenophobia, and again, the othering that is in so much a part of how people understand the disease, have learned about the disease. And she uses this discussion to give us three new lessons. Number one, what's in a name? Part two. Number two, xenophobia is fear. Fear facilitates denial. And number three, prejudice is a disease. When she was talking about the hot zone, had you read the book or how did you first hear about Ebola? Part of the discussion is that in the West, this sort of extreme clinical version of Ebola and how that changed how people understood it and the fear that it induced. Whereas in other parts of the world, she says it's called the caretaker's disease. It's kind of difficult to get, but is constant and ongoing problem. So how did you guys first become aware of or knew about Ebola and how was it described or did you understand it at the time?
I never heard about the Hot Zone book prior. It was my first time reading about it in Dr. Nixon's book. But about Ebola, I think when I was young, I remember I'm originally from Kenya and where Ebola kind of originated from, the Democratic Republic of Congo. I think that's in West Africa. I mean, it is in West Africa for sure. But back then, I remember hearing about how people were dying. And it was such a merciless death. And that's how Ebola was described to me, just the painting of the death back then. And then in 2014, I was in the US, I was here for my undergraduate studies. And that's when the outbreak of Ebola in the United States once again happened. And the fear that was described with the disease and how it was described as a foreign disease kind of touched me because back home, it was kind of very close to home. And then coming here, it's sort of like a stranger thing. And so that stark difference between how it was described prior in my childhood and then the fear that engulfed it when I came here as an adult was kind of what caught me with the disease that is Ebola.
Yeah, I did not read this book, but I watched something in school. So the late 90s, early aughts. About Ebola, and it had a very, I would say, probably a similar viewpoint or description of the disease as the Hot Zone did. It was extremely visceral, the description, in terms of the bleeding out of all of your pores, the extremely contagious, you know, it was that extreme when I was first introduced to it. I don't like remember thinking about it that much after that point, except, you know, this sort of, oh my gosh, that is very serious, maybe the worst disease that I have ever heard of. But not again that much until, like you said, Noelle, the outbreak in the, about was 2014 or something. And at that point, though, I'd had some microbiology classes. I'd had some, maybe I was becoming a little bit more aware of how diseases travel in general. And it did, you know, so at the time, I remember feeling that people are responding to this quite foolishly, but I didn't, you know, you don't go and take the next steps in terms of like the stuff that she's describing in here about, and maybe we'll get into that, but that a little bit here in the United States is reason for panic, but the seasonal, maybe not seasonal, but it's pretty frequent outbreaks in parts of Central and West Africa that are kind of ignored, you know. And if we all believed that the disease was as bad as it was described there, the fact that didn't think about it between for those 20 years is pretty, oh boy, it doesn't reflect well on me or most people, I think.
And I just remember being terrified and thinking that's just so awful and just a lot of fear. So, but I also remember thinking, well, unfortunately, and I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but like that's over there, it's not here, but being terrified that it could someday be here. And then in 2014, when the outbreak happened, I was a little more informed, and I don't think I was quite as scared, but I still had a lot of anxiety surrounding it.
What we're kind of describing is maybe some of the lessons, the it's not here, it's there mentality that she gets into. So maybe we'll jump into the lessons and we can explore that a little bit more. So first lesson was what's in a name, part two. So again, here she's talking about how, you know, first of all, the idea of epidemic and endemic defines, you know, an epidemic is an unexpected outbreak. An endemic is a naturally occurring low level. And the fact that we would consider Ebola endemic in Africa as though it is acceptable at that low level, it doesn't reflect well. Let's just put it that way. And then she goes on further in the chapter to be talking about how we name diseases. You know, Ebola is a reference to the name of a river in Africa. West Nile, also the name of a river in Africa. And while those diseases can be almost anywhere in the world, as we have observed, and West Nile virus now being quite common in the US, we still call them those things, and that, you know, imparts a sort of othering.
I think there's a sentence where she says, we in the West tend to treat epidemics as unacceptable, intolerable levels of disease that must be combated swiftly. And I thought of that in terms of AMR, and, you know, there's 750,000 people that die of AMR every year. But where's the concentration of those deaths? So, I mean, I think until a lot of people are dying here, I kind of wonder if we'll have the same attitudes about AMR in terms of, well, it's a developing country problem, or, you know, it's not, I'm wondering when we'll finally be like, okay, this is something we need to take care of now, you know, where that becomes the general public attitude.
On the same point, according to endemic versus pandemic, I think for that, I was kind of looking at hospitals versus agriculture, whereby we put AMR to be responsible mostly for one side, like that fight in who is more responsible. I think that's what came out for me in this chapter. Like what's in the name, like what about AMR, who is the most contributor to antimicrobial resistance, and then having that fight. And so just like Amber asks, when will we come to realize that this is a problem that faces everyone, and then we can act accordingly?
She's saying, like, I think she said something like that the search for the source is kind of like a way to reflect response or to deflect responsibility, or to, again, emphasize maybe that there's no way that it could happen to us. It's a separation just by creating this naming construct. We're seeing this problem and we're looking for all of these who to blame, you know, things like you're saying, Noelle, like, okay, so we've got this problem with antimicrobial resistance. Well, who is using antimicrobials? That must be the problem, you know? So hospitals and agriculture, like you said, that is like our immediate response is, let me go back to the source and let me spend all my energy on blaming them. And that, as though that would create some wall to separate us from disease. Well, that's never going to work. The whole exercise is sort of like she says, it's almost counterproductive because, you know, you're wasting all this energy blaming people. Meanwhile, the bacteria or the virus is just, you know, out there multiplying, and it will get to you no matter how much you say it's somebody else's fault. And that's very applicable to how we're going to deal with AMR for sure, because we can't spend too much time on this blaming phase. You know, AMR is going to be an issue that we have to deal with no matter how it started to begin with. So let's not spend too much energy on the blame game. And I think there's some overlaps into the discussions that follow. So the next one is called Xenophobia is Fear and Fear Facilitates Denial. I think it's mostly about how xenophobia, the existence of xenophobia, the fear, it's about fear of others. And it's sort of in parallel with fear of disease, and that we allow that xenophobic and panicked response to other people or to disease. It's very self-defeating because it usually makes things worse.
Right. She talks about fear about, she talks about COVID-19 and how people in the United States, before they even knew about how it was, the virus was passed, how people were already masking up and obsessed with not touching their faces and just really scared. And then on the other side of that, the total denial of it, and that we couldn't be touched by it, and that there were college students having COVID costume parties where people congregated in great numbers dressed in hospital gowns and masks.
Yeah, because there was the feeling that it couldn't happen here. People think that it's not us. And then you open yourself up for these to behaviors that are totally irrational in the face of what is actually going on. You know, there is one more lesson in this chapter, and that is prejudice is disease. It's a very short little lesson, but powerful, in a section that's all about how we kind of have allowed diseases to be unaddressed if they affect people who are not us, is such a horrible thing to say. But and then also her discussion that we fear death, and we think that the differences between us, in this case, geographical, but it could be other disease, like in the discussion of HIV last time, sexual orientation, we think that those differences are enough to save us, to keep us safe from disease. And that sort of reinforces prejudice. But she's reframing that as those are the disease, those are the things that are keeping us from addressing the disease when it would be most effective to do it.
I think you summed it up pretty well. It is a short little lesson, but like you said, a very powerful one.
I also think in this section, but I think she said, again, this lesson that Noelle had reframed before about we live together or we die together, how disease unites us, right? Disease unites us in life if we can address it, because we have to address it together, or it unites us in death. And prejudice is going to be a deciding factor in which of those two things it ultimately is.
Yeah.
All right. So that was chapter 10. So there is still a conclusion we'll be reading or we'll be discussing, and our overall thoughts on the sort of the conclusion and the overall thoughts on the book. And that will wrap up the series. We'll go ahead and close out the podcast for today. And look forward to talking with y'all again soon. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So welcome back to this episode. Or does anybody else want to start us in?
Mara, you do so well.
Well, I don't know about that. I always like to hear other voices. Okay.
This is me saying I'm not gonna unless Amber wants to.
Okay.
Mara, you do it so well.